Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
Now, today's session is called Using Movement and Dance to Overcome Trauma with the lovely and beautiful Jenny McGrath. Jenny is a mental health counselor, a yoga and movement facilitator, and she offers embodied story workshops worldwide through Zoom. Jenny, it's so nice to have you with us today. Thanks for being here.
Oh, really nice to be here. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming and saying hi in the chat. So good to see your names. I'm going to switch over to PowerPoint as I'll be walking us through that for our presentation today. So bear with me just one moment. I tend to think that visuals are helpful, so hopefully you will too. So as mentioned, I'm going to be talking about using movement and dance to overcome trauma. And my hope in this talk is that wherever you find yourself on the spectrum of movement and dance, whether you've been a lifelong, maybe even a professional dancer, or dance feels like just something that induces a lot of anxiety, I hope that I can kind of stigmatize what dance might or might not mean, and really get us back to the essence of our bodies being wired for rhythm and for movement. And so I'm going to share a little bit about my own journey of discovering that and gathering resources that I'll share from some of the other speakers that you might have had the opportunity to listen to throughout this conference, as some teachers are here as well. So before I even begin, I would like to acknowledge that I am on the traditional land of the first people of Seattle, the Duwamish people, past and present. And I'd like to honor with gratitude the land itself and the Duwamish tribe. As we talk through our session today about trauma, what I'll be also talking about is trauma as displacement from body, from culture, from land. And a large part of that is due to white supremacy and kind of the idea of displacing people and the history of displacing people. And so this is a very small step in acknowledging just a long history of social change that needs to happen as we talk about personal trauma and collective trauma through today. And I want to begin by inviting you to allow your eyes to actually come off of the screen for a moment. If it feels comfortable for you to let your eyes start to roam around your space. Whether you've been at this conference or you've been working or binging Netflix, my sense is that your eyes might be glued to a lot of screens these days. And so I'd just like to give us a moment to let your eyes get curious about the different colors, the different textures and objects in your space. Just noticing if there's any color or object that seems to draw your attention. Just allowing that to be a resource for you throughout our time today, knowing that you can always take your eyes off of the screen and just remind your body where you are. As we talk about things, sometimes our minds can do a really good job time and space traveling. And so there'll be multiple invitations to just let your body and your mind be here now. And so I want to start, before we even talk about how or why dance and movement can be used to heal trauma, I want us to kind of have a common understanding, at least in this teaching, what I'm talking about when I say trauma. Because I think there are many really good and different variations. And so just like scar tissue can form on our individual bodies, trauma can show up as scars in our collective, our familial, and even our ecological bodies. And one idea that I want to share from a racial-informed therapeutic model developed by Sam Lee and Melody Lee is this idea that a lot of times in trauma work, we become really good at asking the question, what happened to you? And I think that's a wonderful question for us, for people that we work with. And what their model also recommends and invites us to is to start to ask, what happened to your people? What is still happening? How is trauma alive in systems that are taking place? And that will become so significant and important for us as we continue to learn how to shift both the internal stuckness of trauma and where it can get lodged in these larger systems. So in order to heal trauma, we must continually learn that trauma is perpetuated by systems of white supremacy, patriarchy, ableism, ageism, sizeism, religious supremacy, classism, socioeconomic status, gender and sexual discrimination, and many other systems that we live in. And so it feels really important to name what might be obvious is that I am a white woman. And so when we talk about intersectionality, this idea by Kimberly Crenshaw, I know some oppression as a woman, and I know much privilege as a white-bodied person. And I think that's really important to name and acknowledge as we talk about systemic trauma and a collective trauma, that I've had the privilege to travel in and out of places to learn about embodiment. Most of my embodiment learning, at least in my body, hasn't actually happened in a Western context. And I've learned really good language and wording that can be used to describe embodiment. But most of my work and my personal healing has happened in the context and learning how much music and dance were naturally a part of the culture of the Acholi tribe. That when there was personal or collective trauma, it was not even thought about that they would get together and move and dance. And I think that disembodiment is a trauma of white supremacy, of a displacement from culture, from heritage. So I mentioned I'm a white woman, but a truer way to say that is that I have Polish and German and English heritage and ethnicity. And when we kind of think about whiteness, our work becomes to unpack it and learn more about the embodiment of what happened to our people, whether it is German people, whether it is Polish people, particularly in the context, as I mentioned, I'm in Seattle. And so in America, there has been in the US this really displacement from the body. And so as we talk about the embodiment conference and as we do all of these wonderful teachings and breakouts, I think it's really important to honor that much of the embodiment work that we are learning from and healing from is work developed by Indigenous people, people that are not white, and really want to significantly honor that as we journey together today. And I love quotes, as you will find if you haven't been in my teachings before. But Nina Salami talks about what she calls Euro-patriarchal knowledge. And it's this idea that there is a disembodied way of thinking. And it's not that that's inherently bad. Maths and sciences can tend to be more cognitive. And what she's inviting is that we also have a visceral bodily sense of knowing that we need to tap into and remember our humanness. As she shares in this poem or this thought that humans are distinctly poetic and erotic. And to degrade these qualities in knowledge production is to deprive knowledge of its humanness and render it robotic. And I don't want to change her language, but I think the same language applies for trauma work, that a lot of times we come at it cognitively and we've made it kind of robotic. And what trauma research has shown over and over again is that that doesn't work. When we experience trauma, we need bodily forms of healing. Using movement, using dance, using breath, using yoga, these ideas are not new ideas for many people of color all around the world. And so want to continue to hold that in our minds as we especially those of us who inhabit white bodies are learning what it means to become more embodied and what it is to heal from trauma. And so again, I want to honor and acknowledge that many of the embodied lessons I have learned about the healing power of movement and dance are from the Acholi people in northern Uganda. I actually grew up as a dancer my entire life. And so dance was always important to me. But I grew up in a context in which dance was very performative. And there was, and still is, aspects of performance that I really love. And what I experienced in Uganda for the first time was dance that got to be collective. That it wasn't about performance, it wasn't about outshining anyone, it was about letting the body get to feel connected to the other bodies. And I think of trauma as a loss of connection to our own body and our collective body. And so as we engage these larger thoughts and topics about collective trauma, I'm going to have us zoom in a little bit and talk about how these collective disembodiments, how these collective traumas impact us on individual personal levels. And so we're going to go ahead and take a look at the body through three different lenses. And we'll look at the nervous system, we'll look at the breath, and then we'll look at the psoas muscle. And then we'll talk about how these systems are at play with dance and rhythm and movement. So our vagus nerve, it comes from the Latin word meaning wandering nerve. And this is an image that shows where our vagus nerve is in the body. So as you can see, it wanders a lot. It starts in our brain, in our cranium, and it moves throughout our throat. It moves into our chest. It moves all the way into our gut. And as you can see, it has lots of branches all through our body. And our vagus nerve is what enables us to feel safe. It's what tells us that we can be in rest and digest, and that we don't have to be in fight or flight or freeze. And one thing that I think is really important to know about this nerve is that 80 to 90% of it is afferent, which means that 80 to 90% of it is sending signals from the body into the brain. So only about 10 to 20% of the vagus nerve is sending signals from the brain to the body. So another way to say that is that we cannot think ourselves into a state of rest. And so if our personal relationships or if our collective relationships have been disrupted, if there's been trauma, we can't always, if it's a minor thing that happens, we might be able to say, okay, that was just a little argument, we can get over it. But when there is big rupture in relationship, when there is big loss in attunement and attachment and connection, then we have to engage the body in order to allow it to start to feel safety and rest. We can't just give platitudes to ourselves or to other people that it's going to be okay. And my sense is, as I say this, I'm telling that to people who already have a sense of that, since you are here at the Embodiment Conference, that maybe you realize the significance and the importance of engaging the body. And so, I hope that this maybe gives some language to articulate and to help validate what you've already been sensing already. And Resmaa Menakem calls the vagus nerve the soul nerve, which I love. And he says the soul nerve is where we experience a felt sense of love, compassion, fear, grief, dread, sadness, loneliness, hope, empathy, anxiety, caring, disgust, despair, and many other things that make us human. So in other words, it is a big deal. It makes a big difference in our lives if our vagus nerve is communicating to us that we are safe or that we're not. And we'll talk more about this later, but what research has shown, and again, what I think many Indigenous cultures have known forever, is that when the body moves and mirrors other bodies, it helps send signals to the nervous system that we're okay. Our bodies are always seeking to other bodies around us at conscious and unconscious levels. Our brain waves and our breath and our heart and things that we don't even think about will naturally sync up to the other bodies that we are around. our bodies have needed to pick up on subtle cues in order to keep us safe. And so dancing and moving together is one of the ways in which our body can start to feel attuned to and cared for by the other bodies around us. So I want to just give us a moment to, again, let your eyes get curious about where you are. A lot of what we're sharing is a lot of head things. And so just an invitation to sink back into your body, to start to notice your breath. Not needing to change or alter anything about the breath, but just noticing what your breath might be speaking to you. Noticing how fast or slow your breath might be flowing. Noticing if the breath feels like it's reaching all the way into the belly or if it's stopping short in the chest. Noticing if the breath is audible, if you can hear your breath or if it's really quiet. And there's no right or wrong answer to any of those prompts. Just noticing what you notice. Starting to see if you can feel your weight in your chair, maybe just a little bit more. Maybe having a sigh, that feels good. So our breath is one of the on-off switches for our vagus nerve. It's an oversimplified way to state it, but to get our minds to start to track that our breath is sending signals to our body of whether we are safe or whether we're not. In our limbic system and our body, it doesn't know what's happening cognitively. It only knows a felt sense. So if I'm breathing really quick because I'm nervous that I'm about to give this talk to you all, my body cannot differentiate that stress from a stress of walking in the woods and seeing something in the corner of my eye that might be an animal trying to eat me. There's not a lot of nuance in our nervous system. It's pretty much either we can rest or we can't. A lot of that happens from the signals that the breath is sending to the rest of the body. And our diaphragm is our primary muscle responsible for our breathing. It sort of looks like a jellyfish in our rib cage. And when we inhale, that jellyfish pushes down into our belly and it triggers. If we have a deep breath into the belly, it triggers our vagus nerve. And it sends a signal that says, oh, all the way down here, that means we're fine. But when the breath is not moving all the way into the belly and it's staying shallow, that is registering in the body as panting or hypervigilance. And it's sending signals to the body that maybe I'm running away, maybe I'm fighting something off. And so then that tells the body that we need to be prepared for stress. And so, or if we're not even breathing into the chest and we maybe are just taking tiny, tiny sips of air into our throat, that can also send a signal to the body that we're not able to fight something off. we're not able to run away. And so we've had to move into a state of freeze. And what's really important to know is that fight and flight and freeze are wonderful things. They are what has enabled us as a species to exist, to survive, to live. That we are wired, just like any other animal, to move into these visceral experiences of fight, of flight, or of freeze. But what happens if we aren't able to again feel safe? The body gets stuck either in a state of fight or flight or freeze, or maybe some interchange of the three, but the body doesn't have an ability to start to settle. And I also want to say that this is why I think it's really significant to address and start with collective trauma and systemic forms of trauma. Because a felt sense of safety might not be and is not currently available to everyone. Be that from skin color, be that from ability, be that from gender or sexual orientation. We live in a world in systems that don't make all bodies equally safe. So when we are engaging trauma, we have to hold this in mind so that this doesn't add yet another burden on people, that there's not something they're doing wrong by not feeling safe. So I think to engage this channel of trauma and social justice, the two aren't separable. Much of our trauma is because of social injustice. And we need to be engaging both healing and working on healing the individual body and working to heal these systems that perpetuate trauma in certain bodies. So when we are able to take those deep breaths, when we're able to feel safe, the body can settle. And our breath is one of the most honest things about us. So again, it's not bad or wrong if the breath isn't moving all the way into the belly. That just becomes data for us to know and to be curious about. And our diaphragm has fascia, which is connective tissue that connects it to our psoas muscle. This pink lines on each side are images of our psoas muscle. We have two, one on each side of our body. And so the diaphragm sits on top of where you see the psoas muscle connect to the spine. And the psoas muscle moves through the gut, through the belly, through the pelvic floor, all the way to the top of our femur bone or our thigh bone. And it's often nicknamed our fight-flight muscle. It's the only muscle that connects our upper body and our lower body, our torso and our legs. So it is the primary muscle responsible for running, for kicking. And even when we're in freeze, there's a signal to the psoas to kind of shrink and curl in to help protect all of the vital organs in our belly. So anytime that we are in stress, whether that's fight, whether that's flight, whether that's freeze, the body is going to start to tense the psoas muscle in preparation. Response is needed. And when we live in a chronic state of stress, we can develop a fatigued psoas. And what's really amazing is that through movement, through dancing, through stretching, through restorative postures, we can start to bring more lubrication, more fluidity to our psoas muscle, that it doesn't become dried out, it doesn't become brittle, but it's something that is able to kind of pulse with life and send signals to the rest of our body that we're safe. Because the vagus nerve and our breath in our psoas, they sort of become this feedback loop where when our psoas is tight, it's going to be constricting our breath, which is going to send messages to our nervous system that we're not safe. And so there's different ways in which the body continues to tell itself, I'm not safe. And again, there might be very valid reasons that that is true. And when we bring together bodies and we move collectively, it allows a moment to let the body settle and let the body rest. And again, a lot of this is what I experienced when I was able to witness survivors of over 20 years of civil unrest and war in northern Uganda. And when I would ask them, you know, what do you do when you experience trauma, when you experience heartache? It was simple. Like, we dance, we get together and we move. We allow, you know, they didn't say this, but my mind thinks like we allowed the psoas to move. We allowed our breath to flow together. We allowed our nervous system to feel connected to the other nervous systems around you. So we can start to create these little incubators of safety in dance experiences as we continue to work against these systems that perpetuate lack of safety. And so I want to continue sharing a little bit more about movement and dance and how we can use movement and dance to help the breath, the nervous system, the psoas, start to let us move out of those states of fight, of flight, of freeze. So I want you to think about something, and you can feel free to just even take a moment and let yourself settle back into your chair. Maybe even close your eyes if that feels safe for you. And just notice what happens when I remind you that before you took your first breath, you moved. That before you were even born, your body was stretching and curling and perhaps hiccuping and kicking and yawning. Movement is the most natural thing about our bodies. And just notice what happens in your body when I remind you of that. Without judgment, without expectation, just noticing what you feel. Remembering that movement is an innate part of your body's wisdom. That your body knows how it wants and needs to move. And maybe even taking a moment, if it's comfortable for you with your eyes closed or your eyes open, to just ask yourself, is there any way in this moment that my body wants to move? And if it's able for you and if it's comfortable, that might mean standing up. It might mean shaking or kicking or running in place. You can also do that as you sit down, maybe even just shake your hands, stomp your feet. Or maybe you want to do slower movements like stretching and reaching, maybe a yawn or opening your eyebrows and mouth feels good. If you got to just let your body move in any way that it wanted or needed to move in this moment, letting it move as fast or as slow as you'd like. Noticing if it feels better to move with your eyes open, using that resource of reminding yourself where you are. Or maybe it feels better to just close your eyes, let the rest of the world fade away. That movement isn't anything new. It's actually the very first thing that your body did on its own. So just letting yourself notice. And again, there is no judgment. There's no right or wrong. We might have stories that have shamed the way that we've moved. We might be in places where it hasn't always been safe to just move and do whatever our body wants. So sometimes it's a process of reconnecting to your body's wisdom. And so if that's not tonight or this morning, does not mean that you are doing anything wrong. It just becomes something to be curious about, to notice what your body's holding. And maybe there is more freedom to shake it out, to stretch it out, to run it out. And you can feel free to notice, even as we continue, is there any way that your body is wanting or needing to move as you listen? And feel free. You by no means need to stay seated, finding any posture, any movement that might be good for you as you listen. And I want us to think about how trauma is a loss of rhythm, a loss of being in synchrony with ourselves, our community, and our environment. That when trauma is not stuck in the body, the breath and the psoas and the vagus nerve, they get to ebb and flow. And when we are stuck in trauma, the body goes a little haywire and it might not know exactly how to feel or what system to be in. And so it can kind of feel clunky, like we're learning a new dance that we've never done before. And that's sort of exactly what's happening in the body when it has unresolved stress, which turns into trauma. And I just love this reminder that the subatomical particles we see in nature, the quarks, the electrons, are nothing but musical notes on a tiny vibrating string. The universe is a symphony of vibrating strings. Just noticing how that image impacts you. Whether you've always considered yourself a dancer or you've never considered yourself a dancer. What would it look like to think about all movement as a form of musicality, of rhythm and connection with all of the universe? And when we are able to move in synchrony, when we have collective movements, when we're all moving together. And as I do these next few slides, I'm going to sway back and forth. And it is totally up to you, but I might invite you, if it feels comfortable, to let your body sway with mine. And you can feel free to do that or not do that, no pressure. But if it feels right, and if it feels like something you want to choose to do, maybe just notice what that's like, to allow your body to find synchrony. Because again, we're talking about head knowledge, but we don't want to lose the body knowledge. We can sometimes get caught up in the language or the research that our bodies already innately know. And so collective movements, as we move, as we sway together, they can activate our mirror neurons, creating a rush of neurochemicals that can make us feel good. And I want to say can make us feel good because again, we all are coming in different bodies and in different stories. So if you find that mirroring my rocking does not feel good for you, no need to do it. You can stop at any moment reminding yourself where you are. It just is something to be curious about. And dancing can, again, not always, but it can create a felt sense of attunement, of safety and connection with others. And I want to borrow two concepts from David Emerson's trauma-sensitive yoga when it comes to movement. One is choice making. I think it is always important for us to have agency over our bodies when we move, when we don't move. So as you might have noticed, I often use language like if you'd like to, when you're ready, if it feels good. And I think that's always important when we're using dance to move through trauma, is to allow agency over the body. And the second one is the term interoception, which just means paying attention to what you feel. What are the sensations? What are the temperatures? What is your breath doing? And just noticing from the inside out what those movements feel like. And dancing and singing together are the early rituals that enabled us to form large, cohesive communities. That it is something of value not only for our personal body, but our collective body, to start to have an imagination. Again, especially those of us in white bodies. What would it look like to start to have an imagination for collective movement, collective dancing? And one of the things that this brings more consciously is something that's already happening always, is limbic resonance. So energy from our nervous systems, our limbic systems, is always trying to tune in to the other nervous systems around us. So when we move together, it allows our mind and our body to be a little more congruent. That our mind starts to recognize, oh, our bodies are doing this naturally. And we just become more aware of that limbic resonance, that connection into the music of community, of the whole universe. And Resma Menakem speaks of the settled body. When one nervous system is settled, it creates a resonation with the other bodies around. our nervous systems are always communicating with each other, whether we're on the line or not. And so when we feel a settled body, it allows our body to also settle. And again, one final quote is that not only have we avoided intimately knowing our bodies, we have forgotten that our bodies like doing stuff, walking, dancing, running, having sex. Unapologetic action is our departure from these old stories, prompting us to reconnect with the joys of movement. And so just noticing again, if you've been rocking with me, if you've been finding your own movements, or if your movement is just noticing your breath, seeing if there's any way that your body would want to move in this moment. Feeling free to remember your face is part of your body. If there's any movement that feels good in your face or your shoulders. And that is my information, if you would like it. My website is indwellcounseling.com, and on Instagram I'm at indwell_Seattle. And I've tried my best to mention these as we've gone along, but these are the various resources and people that have been very influential to me. So I'll leave this up here for another moment if you want to take a screenshot or a picture, and just if you are at all a nerd like me and enjoy reading all the time, there's some really good books in here. All right, and I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing now and just say thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, Jenny, thank you so much. This has been wonderful, truly wonderful. If there are questions, we still have a few moments, but you know, I wanted to really commend you, because I really was moved and loved. You said you've loved quotes, and I love the ones you picked, and I loved your attribution, and I was moved that you are so clear in kind of recognizing that, you know, science is coming to what Indigenous peoples around the world have known forever, and what activists and voices of peoples have been trying to get us to pay attention. And I think you've done a really beautiful job bridging both the modern science and the truth of human body knowing at these deep levels. So I loved that. Thank you.
Thank you.
The website we are going to post again, it is indwellcounseling.com. And, you know, if you are looking for, it's funny because I'm here as the host. So I'm saying, hey, if you want to see that PowerPoint again, yeah, you can just play the video. But I'm sure we can also put it back on if that's okay. One of the other things that I was really, really enjoying that you were talking about was dance as presentational versus dance as relational. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was like the big aha moment for me.
Yeah, we don't have many spaces, I feel like, where dance gets to be more relational and collective. And that's been my hope. And something, you can find this information on my website, but I do weekly movement classes that are really based on just getting us to get to move however we want to move, and getting to connect to other bodies and move in a way where we get to feel that reciprocity and sharing.
Wow. So I imagine that's something that you were doing in person, and now is it online?
Yes, it's 100% online right now. So feel free to join. There's been people from all over the world that have jumped on. So anyone is welcome. And that is on the offerings page on my website.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. Now, how have you found the transition from in-person to online?
Yeah, parts of it are hard, you know, as I talk about our limbic systems communicating, there's a little bit more translation work that happens on the screen.
Sure.
But I do think there's something really safe about people getting to be in their own homes and getting to explore movement, especially since it isn't something that's super common. Sometimes being in a studio where everyone can see you is a little daunting. And so I always give the invitation in my classes, if you want to turn your camera off, if that makes you feel safer, there's always space for that. And so I found that it's actually been more accessible and safe for some bodies to be able to find that movement there. So it's been really encouraging to see what's possible on Zoom.
We have a couple of questions. Kathy asks, how to work with physical disability ableism? Can only dance my own dance. Others' directives and group classes cause pain.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a great question. So I like to say, and without knowing the particularity of ability that you are writing in with, I want to thank you for your question and feel free to add if I'm not answering it. But with some bodies that don't have maybe mobility, the ability to move limbs, what I always encourage is that our bodies are always moving. With our heartbeat, with our breath, with our digestive tract, with our blood flow. And so sometimes I've had people join my classes that have said, I spent the whole time laying on the floor, and that was exactly the movement that they needed. And so I try to never give directions of do this with your body. I always give invitation with the invitation that maybe the movement that you want to do or that you're able to do is just being aware of the internal movement of your thoughts, of your breath. And so the hope is that it is accessible to all various abilities.
Another question we have is, when I'm in a freeze moment, I feel, like you said, a loss of rhythm. How do I start my engine to work for another rhythm that doesn't seem like a gap I cannot bridge?
Great question. So I think orientation, letting your eyes really become present with what's around you, can be helpful for bringing us out of a state of freeze. Another thing that can be really helpful, we didn't do this today, but one of my favorite things to do is called vooing, where you just exhale out for a very long time. And if you do that a few times, it can help stimulate your vagus nerve and help the body come out of freeze. But I also think, you know, we might not be able to come out of freeze sometimes on our own. Sometimes we might need a therapist or a friend or a family member to remind us that we are safe and we can settle. And so I have resources, and I'm always happy to provide referrals as well to amazing therapists that could help if there does feel like that inability to come out of freeze.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I'm going to point everyone again to Jenny's website, indwellcounseling.com. And thank you again for being here today. It really was a wonderful presentation. The chat is full of beautiful insight. Thank you so much. Great energy and inspiring presentation. And I couldn't agree more. So thank you so much for being with us. This is the Trauma and Social Change Channel of the Embodiment Conference 2020. Next, we have Dr. Teresa Lau with the new rules of self-care in a time of social distancing. We want to thank Steve Hoskinson and Organic Intelligence for their sponsoring of this channel. And we want to remind you that this is free for 48 hours, and you are welcome to watch it, let people you know who you feel can benefit from this information know about it. And if you are like me and you want to soak up every ounce of all of this great information, you might want to consider purchasing the library. The library has all 1,000 talks, which feels completely overwhelming. overwhelming. And so the conference has put together learning lists in each category and in each subject so that you can move through these experts and presentations in a logical order that helps you build your knowledge. And it has audio only files so you can do it as podcasts. They've really thought of everything to make this as to make it for us so that we can integrate it at our own pace. And I think that's amazing. It's also a big thank you to our organizers who have put this on and made it available worldwide to have, you know, the greatest impact that we can have. And so if you are in a position to support it, know that your support not only gets you all of these wonderful bonuses and the talks themselves, but it also contributes to our ability to kind of counterbalance the disembodied trauma that the whole world seems to be extremely traumatized by right now. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your care as you move more deeply into yourself and your own embodiment. And Jenny, you've given us so many great things to think about and to explore more, but I'm gonna ask for one more. And that it's the question we're asking from each of our presenters. What is your top tip on how to be more embodied?
So one of my favorite things to do, and I hope everyone does this at least once a day, if able, and finding your variation, is to let your body shake. Shake your arms, shake your legs, shake everything. I think it is a wonderful resource to help us come back to ourselves.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I couldn't agree more. Thank you. And that's going to be published. That's going to go out, I think, to everybody who registered for the conference has the ability to hear what those top tips are. And that is a good one. Thanks, everybody. Up next, again, we have Dr. Teresa Lau with New Rules of Self-Care in a Time of Social Distancing. We hope you'll join us. I have 1 minute left, so I'm just going to say it. I am also giving a presentation in 1 hour on the Ecology and Research channel. So I hope to see you there. And thanks so much for being with us. Also, you can continue the conversation on the Facebook page, in the portal, in the coffee shop. There's a coffee break area in the portal. So any of those places, we look forward to seeing you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you everyone so much for coming. Bye.
Really great, Jenny. Thanks so much.